Luke chapter 22. Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, "Pray that you will not fall into temptation." He withdrew about a stone's throw away beyond them, knelt down and prayed, "Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done." An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. What was that cup? What was that cup? If you're willing, take this cup away from me. What was that? What was it that caused Jesus so much anguish? Such that an angel came down and tended to him to give him strength. Jesus, the Son of God. And an angel came to give him strength. Such that his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. Matthew and Mark both record that Jesus told his disciples, Peter, James, and John that were there. He told them that his soul was overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. These are the words Jesus shared with them. This man who fed 5,000 with a little boy's lunch. This man who walked on water. He calmed a life-threatening storm out of a dead sleep. This man who was so powerful that a man who was possessed by a legion of demons, thousands of demons, fell at his feet. A man that could not be subdued, could not be chained or controlled by any other man. And he fell at Jesus' feet and begged Jesus not to torture him. This man who cured leprosy, paralysis, the lame walked, the blind could see, the deaf could hear, the dumb could talk. He even raised some from the dead. And he was overwhelmed. Overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Sweating blood. You know, there was plenty that would happen in the next 24 hours that he could have been referring to when he prayed that God would take this cup from him. This morning, I made a change in the bulletin after it was printed. And in the bulletin, you have "The Hour of Darkness" as the title, but I've retitled "The Darkest Hour." In the garden, this was a dark hour, but it wasn't the darkest hour. So what was this cup? Jesus endured a lot. He endured a great deal of psychological and emotional suffering during the next 24 hours. Let's go and write that down to get started on our notes. Jesus knows the psychological and emotional suffering of rejection. Jesus had asked Peter, James, and John to stay awake and pray for him in the garden. Three times, Jesus returned to them and found them sleeping instead of praying. They had eaten the Passover meal together, so a full belly and the cool night air got the best of them. Even after Jesus had emphatically asked them to stay awake and keep watch and pray for him, this had to be an emotional letdown, a rejection of sorts. A mob comes to arrest Jesus in the garden, led by one of his 12 disciples, Judas. And Judas betrays him with a kiss, which was a common greeting for the Jews at that time. It would be like us coming up and giving a handshake. Once Jesus is arrested, the disciples scatter. Matthew records all the disciples deserted him and fled. Jesus is led to Ananias and then to Caiaphas, the high priest. All of the teachers of the law, all the elders were there, all the chief priests, and the whole Sanhedrin. And they were looking for evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death. That was their agenda. But they did not find any. Many testified falsely against him, but their statements did not agree. All these men that he was before, these elders, the teachers of the law, the Sanhedrin, the chief priests, these were men who studied and knew the scriptures that he and his Father and the Holy Spirit authored. These were the religious leaders who prayed to God the Father on a regular basis. And as Jesus and God and the Holy Spirit are one, I have to believe that Jesus knew their prayers also. And he knew them as individuals, as he knows us as individuals. What they're dealing with at home, their thoughts, their feelings, their struggles, their joys. And here they are. Religious leaders. They led the festivals, the feasts. They participated in the sacrifices that were prescribed by him in the scriptures. These are the people that taught about God. They even taught about the Messiah that was to come. And these men rejected Jesus. While these false testimonies were being spoken, Peter was outside in the courtyard by a fire warming his hands. Three times he is asked by those around him, are you one of his disciples? You were one of his disciples, weren't you? And three times Peter denies being associated with Jesus. And as Peter was denying Jesus the third time, we read in Luke, Peter replied, "Man, I don't know what you're talking about." Just as he was speaking, the rooster crowed. And the Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. Whew. Boy, that. And Jesus is in there just getting torn apart verbally. And the rooster crows and Jesus looks straight at Peter out into the courtyard. Then Peter remembered the word the Lord had spoken to him. "Before the rooster crows today, you will disown me three times." So Peter, James, and John could not stay awake in the garden to pray for Jesus. Judas betrays him, one of his 12 disciples. All the disciples, they run, they scatter, they flee at his arrest. And Peter disowns Jesus. Rejected by the 12 that were closest to him during his ministry. I mean, these guys, they watched his miracles firsthand. Peter, James, and John were picked specifically to go and watch some extra special things. The transfiguration, the raising of a dead girl. They were there for his teachings. They listened to all this that Jesus shared about the kingdom. They even had private sessions with Jesus where he would explain the parables to them. Here's what this meant. They saw Jesus' love and care for mankind firsthand, his compassion, and yet they left him alone. Jesus is then taken before Pilate because the Jews did not have the ability to execute a criminal. They would have to go through the Roman rulers to get that done. Pilate sees nothing wrong with him, finds out that he's under Herod's jurisdiction, and so Pilate sends Jesus to Herod. Herod sees no reason to execute Jesus. So before he leaves, Herod and his soldiers mock and ridicule him and then send him back to Pilate. So he goes back to Pilate's palace. And Pilate tries to give the people a way out as he sees there's no reason to execute Jesus either. So he offers to release Jesus or Barabbas. Barabbas, who is a murderer, an insurrectionist. And the crowd asks for the murderer to be released. For Barabbas to be released instead of Jesus. Matthew 27 What shall I do then with Jesus, who is called the Messiah? Pilate asked. And they all answered, crucify him. So not just rejected by Judas, who betrayed him, or Peter, who denied him, or the others who deserted him, not just by the religious rulers of their time, the teachers of the law, but by all of the people that were there. People who were made in his very own image. People who he, with the Father and the Holy Spirit together, knit them together in the womb, knew them before they were born. These people were yelling, crucify him. People who probably prayed to his Father. People who were the chosen people of God. And we know that Jesus was with God in the beginning. He was there through all the stuff. I mean, we just spent 20-some weeks, I think about 24, 25 weeks going through the Old Testament. All the ebbs and flows and the way how God just went in and rescued them and taught them lessons and let them get taken over and then rescued them again and did this. All these things. Jesus was part of that. And here they are, the chosen people. Crucify him. Jesus knew the psychological and emotional suffering of rejection. At Pilate's, Jesus is stripped. And Pilate's soldiers put a robe on him. They made a crown of thorns to put on his head. And they put a staff in his right hand and they mocked him as king. Hail, King of the Jews! And then they took him to be crucified. Part of the humiliation of crucifixion, I mean, first of all, you were hung by a busy road. But another part of the humiliation was that you were hung naked. And Jesus was not exempt to this practice. John 19, when the soldiers crucified Jesus, they took his clothes, dividing them into four shares, one for each of them, with the undergarment remaining. This garment was seamless, woven in one piece from top to bottom. Let's not tear it, they said to one another. Let's decide by lot who will get it. And this, along with a number of the other things we've already talked about, is a fulfillment of prophecy, something that was prophesied about hundreds of years before it happened. So shamed and ridiculed, mocked and teased, even as he hung on the cross, he was mocked by the soldiers that were there. The chief priests, the teachers of the law followed him. The elders, they were all present and they continued their harassment at Golgotha. Even the people passing by on that busy road joined in to ridicule him. We're told that one of the rebels who was crucified with him was even part of this. All these people saying, save yourself. You saved others, but you can't even save yourself. If you're the Son of God, then why isn't God saving his Son? Jesus, he knew the psychological and emotional suffering of rejection. Jesus can relate to us in our times of rejection. The emotional suffering, the psychological pain. Jesus knows the worst forms of rejection and ridicule, humiliation and teasing, mocking and harassment. So the next time you say to yourself, no one understands what I'm going through, you better believe Jesus does. He knows it far better than what you will ever know it. He suffered more rejection, more emotional suffering, more psychological pain than any of us. But that wasn't the darkest hour. That wasn't the weight of that cup. Maybe it was the physical pain that he endured. Jesus knows the physical suffering of sacrifice. Let's write that down. You think about temptation. Temptation, there's a suffering that goes along with that of sacrifice. You go back to the desert when Satan was tempting Jesus in the beginning of his ministry, and you skip all the way forward to the garden, to very major times when Jesus was being tempted. And the suffering as a result of the struggling with temptation, Jesus knew. Could Jesus have bowed a knee to Satan in the desert? Absolutely, he could have. Otherwise, it wasn't a real temptation. If he couldn't have done it, then it wasn't temptation. Could he have said in the garden, I can't do this. It's too much. This cup that's before me, I can't drink it. I've been obedient to this point, but it stops here. He didn't. He said instead, not my will be done, but your will. He understands. He understands the struggle of suffering while we resist temptation. Hebrews chapter 2 says, because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. And again in chapter 4, he says, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. So let's write this down. Jesus fully understands the suffering associated with resisting temptation. There's a physical suffering that goes along with that. Sometimes it's the physical depravity of avoiding the ways of the world. And sometimes we see that as suffering. We're not getting what someone else is getting, or we're not having this or having that, or enjoying this or enjoying that. Other times, just doing the right thing, doing what God wants us to do, sometimes that involves suffering. Sometimes it's suffering during, sometimes it's suffering afterwards. Though we understand some of that suffering, we will never experience it on Jesus' level. We will never know his level. And so since he suffered temptation here, he can understand every other temptation that we're going through. Jesus is an example of sacrificial service for us to follow. We are called to sacrificial service. Sometimes service is going to be physically uncomfortable, even painful at times. See, before the events happened at Jesus' arrest, the trials, before Judas's kiss, before the garden, when we back all the way up to the upper room, right before Jesus explains and initiates communion, Jesus washes the disciples' feet. We're told that they arrived in the upper room for the Passover meal, and the disciples, they had no clue what the following 72 plus hours would hold and how their world would be changed and turned upside down. And as they're eating this Passover meal with Jesus, some of them, probably the third meal they ate with him, the third Passover meal they ate, Jesus gets up from the table, we're told. So he gets up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. He took on the appearance of a house servant. That's what he looked like when he did this. What does he do next? After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Then after a brief discussion with Peter on the subject, we read, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. This lesson was just starting in the upper room. This wasn't the end of the lesson. This lesson on sacrificial service, it did not crescendo at the washing of the disciples' feet. It made its climax at the cross. This is what sacrificial suffering looks like. This is the ultimate example of being a living sacrifice. Earlier in Jesus' ministry, we read in Mark 8, Jesus says, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. The disciples had no clue how very literal Jesus' example was going to be of this statement, or how very literal they would follow in his footsteps. All martyrs, except for John. Rumors and history of Peter being crucified upside down because he didn't feel like it would be honorable to be crucified the way Jesus was crucified. Take up your cross. If you want to be my disciple, take up your cross and follow me. During the trials, the emotional and psychological pain that we just discussed was there, but there was also a great deal of physical suffering that Jesus endured. They spit on his face. They struck him with their fists. They put a hood on him and slapped him, saying, prophesy to us, Messiah, who hit you? Pilate had him flogged, a scourging so bad that people often died from that alone. During this practice, a criminal was stripped naked, tied to a post, facing the post. And the flogger would stand to their side and use a short whip with many knotted thongs that contained bone or metal. And the whipper would stand to the side of the criminal, and as the whip would land, the pieces of bone or metal would grip the skin and rip it, as well as the muscle underneath as the whipper retracted this tool of torture. The Jews had a limit on how many of these lashings they would give. Jesus was not under the Jews' care when this took place. There's no telling how many there were. After this, Pilate's soldiers dressed him up as a king with a crown of thorns and a staff in his hand. And they took that staff and they struck him on the head again and again after mocking him, as we discussed earlier. And Jesus is presented and they yell, crucify him. And so Jesus is crucified. Nails, 4 to 6 inches in length, driven into his wrists, and one through both feet or ankles. And these three nails held the entire weight of a full-grown man's body. A carpenter at that. Jesus was no lightweight. The position on the cross caused suffocation. So the only way to gain a breath would be to mount up on the nail through the feet and pull up with what strength he had left in his arms for one breath. And then to go limp and hang until the next breath and go through that again just for another breath. Crucifixion was a painful and slow death by asphyxiation. After Jesus' body was lifeless, after he had given up his spirit, they pierced his side with a spear. Jesus experienced at least 6 differently medically defined wounds. Different medically defined wounds. An abrasion, which is where the skin is scraped off. A contusion, which is caused by a heavy blow. An incision, which is produced by a knife or spear or other sharp instrument. A laceration, where the flesh is torn, leaving jagged edges. A penetrating wound, where the flesh is pierced right through. A puncture wound made by a pointed or spiked object. And Jesus endured this for us. For you. For me. And we're told that if we want to be one of his disciples, we are to take up our cross and follow him. This was his example of sacrificial service. This is what it looks like. As he was washing the disciples' feet, he said, I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I don't think that was limited to just the washing of the feet. He gave his life up for us. He suffered for us. He endured immense physical pain for us. But this wasn't the darkest hour. This wasn't even the weight of that cup. See, in addition to the emotional, psychological, and physical suffering that Jesus endured, he also endured a form of suffering that none of us can understand. None of us can relate to this. And that is that Jesus knows the spiritual suffering of the penalty of sin. He knows the spiritual suffering of the penalty of sin. As Jesus hung on the cross, we read in Matthew's account, from noon until 3 p.m, darkness came over all the land. Some people try and explain this away like it was a dust storm or there was an eclipse. No, this was a supernatural occurrence. It was bright as day at Jesus' birth with the star shining above. And it was dark as night in the middle of the day as he died on the cross. Something spiritual happened at this moment. About 3 p.m, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you forsaken me? Many understand this reference as a reference to Jesus bearing the full weight of the sins of the world and the separation that this caused between he and his Father. This was the darkest hour. This was the weight of the cup. Abuse sins. Drunkenness. Drug abuse. Debauchery. Sins involving hurting or harming some other person. Murder, slander, hatred, fits of rage, name calling, degrading someone with your names, gossip, child abuse, spouse abuse, sexual abuse, rape, sexual sin. Lust, pornography, adultery, premarital sex, oral sex with your girlfriend or boyfriend. Sins of greed, the love of money, being envious of what someone else has, coveting someone else's things, an attitude of entitlement, gluttony, idolatry, stealing. Sins of divisiveness, lying, wicked schemes, selfish ambition, discord, dissensions, and factions. This was the cup. This was the cup that he did not want to drink. This was the darkest hour. This was the weight of the cross. We can relate to some level of emotional or psychological pain the pain of rejection that Jesus went through, not at the level that he experienced it, but at least we have some idea of what rejection feels like. And so through that, we can at least gain some partial understanding of what that must have felt like. Because we've experienced rejection in our lives, we use that experience to base some understanding as we read about the horrific events of Jesus' arrest, trials, and crucifixion. We can relate at some level to the physical pain that Jesus endured. And we've all felt physical pain from one degree to another. Definitely not the intensity that Jesus felt that day. But we have felt pain, and so we read this account of the crucifixion. And we can connect with something we know in part, at least. And we use that to help our imagination as we hear the story of Jesus' crucifixion. Not because we want to imagine it, but because that's how we understand, that's how we connect. It's how we have some understanding of how horrible the pain was by comparing what we've experienced in our life to what we're reading in the Bible. But none of us here, none of us here have any clue how dark this darkness must have been for Jesus when he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? None of us know the weight of that cup. None of us know. None of us can even imagine or come up with any kind of illustration or anything that we could refer to that would even give us a vague connection to what that cup was like to drink. He was Jesus. And somehow he was separated from his Father because he bore sin. He took sin on. He wore sin. And his Father could not look on him. And he experienced separation from God. And how intense that pain must have been. Bearing the sins of the world from every person, from all time, from every type of sin. We have no way to understand this. And this was far greater pain than the emotional or psychological or physical pain that Jesus suffered. Jesus knows the spiritual suffering of the penalty of sin, something that Christians will never understand the true weight of, the true weight and burden of. But non-Christians will experience in its fullness. We don't have to experience that cup because Jesus drank it for us. We're told that after Jesus died, at that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. I mean, this was a thick curtain, 6-8 inches thick, and it's torn from top to bottom, signifying that it was God who was ripping it, not man. And the significance of this was to show that through Jesus' death, now the door is open. That curtain separated men from the Holy of Holies. And now God, a relationship with God is wide open for anyone that wants to come to him because of what Jesus did. The earth shook and the rocks split and the tombs broke open. This is amazing. Jesus' death. And tombs break open, showing that his death made it so we wouldn't have to experience real death. When we read on, the next thing that you read is unbelievable. I wish there was more than one sentence about this. Two sentences. The bodies of many holy people who had died were raised to life. They came out of their tombs after Jesus' resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared to many people. It's one of those verses where you're reading, and you're just kind of, what? And that's all we're given. Matthew's the only one that records that. So we're left to guess, who was it? Was it Moses? Was it Elijah? Elisha? Were they walking around? Was it Hezekiah or Zechariah or Isaiah? So all the people that we were reading and studying about for weeks and weeks and weeks. Moses, Noah. Who knows, maybe even Jonah made it. The reluctant prophet, still a righteous man, at least righteous enough that God chose to use him. We don't know who they were. But we get a glimpse of what the resurrection was for. And it was to bring life. This is what happened. This was the darkest hour. Jesus' darkest hour was one of the two best hours for mankind in our history. The second being his resurrection. No jokes today. No funny anecdotes, no stories. Today is to reflect on Palm Sunday of the death that Jesus suffered for us. That through that we understand that he can relate to our times of suffering. Whether it's emotional, psychological, or physical suffering, he understands. But more importantly to reflect on the fact that as Christians, he kept us from suffering the darkness of that darkest hour in our life. He did so by suffering through it in our place.